Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Michael Carey.
Thank you very much for joining us. Our guests are Paul Jenkins of the Anchorage Daily Planet, Dacia Eaton of APRN, and joining us from Juneau, Dave Donaldson, also of APRN. Dave, let's stick with you. The state Senate passes an oil tax bill, an oil tax revision bill, but the governor doesn't seem to be too pleased with it. And right now, hearings are continuing as Senate Finance Committee hears from oil executives and members of the administration. But you have all the details. Please give them to us.
All right. Yeah, the bill was passed from the Resources Committee to the Senate Finance Committee about 3 weeks ago. It's up there, and that's where it's been being heavily time-consuming hearings with economists and this sort of thing. They have come out with the Finance Committee's come out with their own version of the bill as to what it will do. It will reduce taxes. It, first of all, changes the entire format of taxes. Instead of the Murkowski and Palin's taxes on profits, it goes back to actually taxing the gross value of oil. It's a lot cleaner, a lot easier to do, much less complicated. And it's based on what the oil is getting when it goes to, you know, when it's marketed. The reductions fall somewhere, and depending on the price level, the reductions in taxes fall between the current taxes and what the governor wants. There are, even at low prices, actually, it's even more of a reduction to the industry. At the high prices, it's also much lower to the industry. So it's a lot of there's a lot of things to say for and against it. It's, of course, it's not overall easy bumper sticker philosophy here. It is not the sort of thing that is going to be all of a sudden, yes, they're going to stand up and salute it. The oil companies, the administration, the Department of Revenue has come out really, really slamming it very hard.
Now, Dave, co-chairman Stedman of the Senate Finance Committee had some words this morning for the administration. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah. Well, the administration was saying this is this is not the kind of thing that's going to do any good whatsoever. It's the kind of a thing that is insignificant when you really look at what you're doing here, Mr. Chairman. And the chairman said, when you reduce oil from 90% or taxes from 90% to 40%, you cannot call that insignificant. I hear what you're saying, but I don't believe you. I mean, it's tense. Let me put it this way, that Brian Butcher, the Commissioner of Revenue, is hanging on very tightly here, but it's not the sort of thing that's going to lead to a negotiating atmosphere, not at this point.
Okay, thank you very much, Dave. We really appreciate you joining us, and I know how busy things are in Juneau at this time of the year. The Anchorage municipal election is over, and let the investigations and recriminations begin. Paul, first of all, give us a review of the election results.
Overall, the mayor won his race, his re-election. Mayor Sullivan, 59.3 to Paul Honeyman's 38.2 in a campaign that Honeyman couldn't seem to get traction until the very end, and when he got personal, and I think at that point the people probably turned people off. The spread's pretty significant. 53,000 votes cast. All the monetary bonds, seeking money for loans for bonds, those all passed. School district, road district, park, rec, all of that passed. All in all, voters were very pleased to go to the poll, I suppose. Proposition 5 failed. I think there should be no real surprise, I suppose. But the voters seemed happy to spend money this time.
Okay, the ones who got to vote and weren't unhappy because they didn't get to vote, but we'll get to that.
Exactly.
Dacia Eaton, welcome.
Thank you.
Headline, ballot shortage investigated. This is not what we expected a couple days after the election.
No, the phone calls started coming into the newsroom about 6 p.m. on voting night of people calling to tell us that they'd run out of ballots at their polling places. And that ended up being the big story. So what went wrong? That's the big question. That's what the clerk's office is trying to figure out now. And they're counting all of the precincts. They've gone through about half of them. It looks like there could be, we're not sure yet, but it could be a record turnout for the election. So far, they've counted about 3,000 ballots, and Friday afternoon, they're going to count the rest of the precincts, and they're the larger precincts. So it looks like, according to the clerk, we're going to break the 6,000 mark on the ballots.
And
those are questioned
ballots.
It's
anticipated that those ballots will be counted Friday afternoon and probably be available by Friday evening, if all goes as we hope.
If all goes as we hope.
Okay. Also, we have the results on Proposition 5, the so-called Gay Rights Initiative or Amendment. And from the perspective of the proponents of Prop 5, then they had a large group of people who were supporters and a coalition of politicians, former politicians, religious leaders, civic activists. They outspent the opponents 4-1. And they got clobbered. What happened?
It's hard to say. The polls, Dittman showed that there was a poll that this
Dave Dittman, the pollster.
Dave Dittman, the pollster, said this could pass. It's very close, at least, but it ended up not so close. And one thing that he said to me when I interviewed him, Dittman, was that sometimes people will tell the pollster what they want to hear. And that's always something to take into account, and perhaps that's what happened here. And once people shut the curtain and got in the voting booth, they voted otherwise.
Okay. Paul, your assessment of the no votes, 58-42% margin, which is what we have on Friday, and it's probably unlikely to change too much the percentages anyway.
Well, if you look at the percentages, they seem to fairly closely track the Sullivan-Honeyman race. I mean, this is a very conservative state and a very conservative community. This thing's come up before, a measure of it has. It's not been widely accepted. I guess I wasn't surprised that it went down, and I'm kind of not surprised that it tracks the Honeyman-Sullivan race, and it's just one of those things. I don't think it's voters in this, I think she's right, voters in this community will likely tell a pollster anything before they would admit somebody they
well, that may be
don't
true
know.
Nationally.
Yeah, it's true everywhere. Yeah, exactly.
And going back to the votes tracking one another, the Sullivan votes and the Prop 5 votes, the Prop 5 proponents to win the election really needed a large number or significant number of ticket splitters, people
yep.
who were willing to vote for Sullivan,
That's
but
right.
also willing to vote for a change in the gay rights law.
And I don't think they found them, obviously. So I don't know that they would exist in this community, at least yet. So
okay.
sometime down the road, you don't know.
Dacia, just quickly, before we turn to the school board, the ACLU was not only, it's been very active in the gay rights proposals, both the legislation and before the assembly, and they gave $10,000 to the Yes on 5 campaign, and now they're suggesting that we need a special counsel to sort out what happened. And that doesn't seem likely at the moment, right?
Yeah, well, not quite yet. The ACLU sent a letter to the chair of the Anchorage Assembly on Thursday asking for them, calling on them to appoint an outside investigator. They said that the municipal attorney and the clerk's office were involved in this already and that they were not objective investigators. And at the same time, you could say the ACLU may not be completely objective.
Yeah.
They've donated money to the Prop 5 campaign. But nonetheless, regardless, ACLU is calling on the assembly to appoint an outside investigator. And WOC Under, the chair, has said, not yet. We're going to let the clerk's office try to figure this out and give them a chance. And we'll consider it, tabling it for now.
Okay. And tell us about the school board race. We had three members of the school board elected.
School board race, well, not a ton of people voted in the school board race. You know, school board, you have to really follow it and study it to know who the candidates are. There are more candidates. A lot of people don't have kids in school. Maybe
yeah,
they don't
vote. I did the homework here that the fall off was about 15-18% mm-hmm. from people who voted for mayor and on the gay rights initiative and then didn't vote, just passed on the school board.
Mm-hmm. I think typically people get in there and they, if they haven't been following the school board, they don't have kids in school, then they don't know who's who. So they probably just skipped
it. And it's sort of our job or the community's job to give them a better education on who these candidates are and why they're needed. Paul, you alluded to it earlier, kind of a surprise with the bonds. Everything passed for a change.
I,
so the
I,
voters
I,
were in a good mood on that accord.
I thought those people who go into the polling place and vote, no, I thought they were going to win. I thought they had it made this time, but they didn't. School board, the school bonds themselves, 5742. That's a nice going away present for Carol Como. I'm sure she's very happy.
That probably is in some measure a vote of confidence in her, right?
I think so. We're going to miss her when she's gone. I think people are starting to realize that. The road and drainage improvement, 6535. That's pretty impressive. We always vote for roads. So we love roads. We like our potholes fixed. We want drainage.
We want drainage, and we want it now.
And here's the one that gets me is parks bonds never passed. Nobody cares about parks. But yet, everybody trooped out there. It's 6040. They voted for them. Transportation, the buses.
By the way, I just looked at the returns, and there was a big fall off also on the parks vote.
Sure.
Number of thousands of people who didn't vote one
just
way or the other.
Didn't care.
Probably they didn't feel involved or board informed.
They didn't know, yeah. Medical transportation, buses, 6634. And that's pretty much it. These other two are house cleaning things. One of them was kind of an overwhelming vote to allow veterans, widows to get $150,000 off their first assessment of their house for taxes. That went 98-27, something like that. 98, it was ridiculous, whatever it was. I can't read my own writing, I can tell you. So, the money part of this thing was surprising, I think.
Okay, let's go back to Dave Donaldson in Juneau. Dave, the Senate Finance Committee puts out a bill that gives every adult recipient of Alaska Permanent Fund dividend a voucher to help pay for their energy bills. Tell us more.
Right. Yeah, this is by Senator Joe Thomas of Fairbanks, and what it is doing is recognizing it costs a lot of money to stay warm in Fairbanks, and that's basically what he's addressing here. There are a lot of restrictions on it. It's based on the actual quantity of heating oil or natural gas or electricity, not on any dollar figure or anything. So for somebody like me in Juneau, it would be somewhere around $800 of value. And there are restrictions. It has to go strictly to the. It's not can't be cashed in or anything like this. And there is a cash value only for renters, so that there would be something for those people, but it's a very small amount actually. It sort of is also a precursor for another bill that's out there, and that's the one that would actually lend you money if you want to change over for a lower-priced heating source. If I want to change from oil to electricity, I could borrow the money at a very low rate and do the job. This is seen as temporary. It's while this other stuff that's coming in here for renewable energy kicks in, while it's working, this is going to try to help people stay warm and at least these through what we hope will be a temporary hard times.
Dave, let's stick with this for a second. If the major problem is in Fairbanks and Bush, Alaska, and of course there are people in South Central who are paying more for fuel than they'd like, why is the answer to solving some people's problem to give everybody these credits or vouchers?
Oh, it's that pesky old Constitution, Mike. It says you can't do something to some people and can't give some people something if you don't give it to everybody, or you got to figure a real clever way of writing it. The bill was originally drafted in very first form. I may have been before it was introduced, but its first draft, it was just for people in certain areas of the state. As it turns out, though, that they found that they really were going to have some legal problems if they did that. And they were going to have some political problems, too, but that wasn't going to, you know, it just was a lot easier just to go ahead and say everybody is paying too much for oil right now.
A couple more questions
Dave.
Do you know, there are a number of thousands of Alaskans who are attending school outside or in the military service outside or serving on behalf of the state in some way in Washington, D.C., doing many things. Are they going to get a energy voucher that they can't use in Washington, D.C. or Seattle? How's this work?
Good question, Mike. I don't know. I think that the Alaska, but and they get one in lower 48 somewhere, they can't use them. Well, the state's not going to pay anything.
Yeah, and I assume that there's some
protected.
Excuse me for interrupting, but I can't see to make eye contact or wave at you, Dave. That I assume that these vouchers are not transferable. I can't sell mine to you for half price or something like that, right?
No.
No? Okay, that's and finally, once again, we have a social service subsidy tied to the Alaska Permanent Fund dividend. And I think we just lost Dave, so we'll come back to him. Dacia, the Samantha Koenig tragedy has a momentary, it took a dramatic turn, and we have something of a resolution, but not quite, as her body was discovered in a lake north of Anchorage.
That happened earlier this week. The police are being very tight-lipped about their investigation. They say they've got the guy who did it in custody, which puts a lot of people's minds at rest. They arrested Israel Keys, dragged a shed off his property, and they're seeking information about his white truck still. Charges haven't been filed yet. They say they're forthcoming. We're all waiting. Everybody across the state, a lot of people have been following this Samantha Koenig story. It's happened here before. Unfortunately, it's happened again. And I think it really struck a chord with a lot of people who want to see this kind of violence against women stop.
And there was great participation by the community. There were signs, all there were flyers and involving her photograph and other information about her to alert people. And in the end, it doesn't seem that any of that worked.
No, but it certainly speaks to how tight-knit that the community of Anchorage is and the state of Alaska, that everyone turned out to support the Koenig family and to help the police in their investigation. And, you know, the police said in the end they think that she was killed within hours of when she was kidnapped. And so there was really nothing anybody could have done. But it does speak volumes about people who live here that they did that.
Okay, and presumably when we get some charging documents, which are expected, we'll know a lot more in a big hurry.
Yes.
Paul, friends and allies of the late Ted Stevens rally here in Anchorage, Justice for Ted rally. Could you tell us a little bit about the rally, and could you tell us, is their goal attainable where we are today?
The rally simply brought together people who were very angry with the Justice Department and the prosecution of Ted Stevens, and feel that he was wronged, Alaska was wronged, in the process of the Justice Department's employees or lawyers breaking the law, they really hurt Alaska over the long term. And I think it was more of a venting process. I was never clear on exactly what it is they wanted to accomplish, but justice in this case is I think, unobtainable. You've still got all but one of the lawyers involved in the case working for the Justice Department, the one that's not committed suicide, and they start to
Nicholas March.
And so I'm not sure justice is certainly not just around the corner, and I'm not sure it's something we could obtain. But there's no doubt that this was a criminal prosecutorial misconduct case where we wind up with a senior U.S. senator and a guy who helped guide Alaska through its formative years denied his seat in the Senate.
And my sense of this is that it's a way for people who are supporters of Ted, friends of Ted, right, people of great affection for him, admiration of Senator Stevens, not just Ted, who I guess he was Ted to so many of us,
that's right,
could express themselves. But it's sort of at some point they need to say, okay, we've done what we've said what we could, and move on. If not, I think then they're going to be open to the question of, is there some other political agenda here?
Right. No, I didn't sense a true political agenda. It was to me, it was like a venting process that was going on. We have laws in the works. I think Senator Murkowski has introduced legislation to deal with this kind of prosecutorial misconduct. We'll have to wait and see.
I believe we have Dave Donaldson back with us. Is that true, Dave?
I'm here.
Okay, I'm delighted. The legislature has only a week and a few days, a week and a weekend before the 90-day session should be over by law, but they've extended before and may again. What's at the top of lawmakers' list of what they have to do here in the last 10 days or so?
I see two things coming. Number one, education. There has to be some money put in and some settlement to all of the issues of education. Base student allocation is the big one. The scholarship for the balance between the merit and the needs-based scholarships is the other one. Those are still hanging right now. The other one is the in-state gas line. It still hasn't passed. And I was talking to Dan Fowsky from AHSC this morning and said they need the bill this year to get the big steps that have to be taken to get that in-state gas line to the to open season, get it going. Those are the two big issues that are pending. Quite honestly, oil taxes, the reception that's going with it, I don't know that they're going to get through with that one, and I'm not sure anybody wants to come back for it. But the other two, they do want to.
And my understanding is that the Senate was largely, or at least the leadership, was skeptical about the gas line proposal that would sort of put HFC in charge of moving a gas line, a modest-sized gas line from the north to south central.
Yeah, it was skeptical about that particular form, but it was AHSC that put the original plan together a couple of years ago. So therefore, it's not that remote of a possibility here that it'll they can do the job. They're set up to do it now. This is a separate branch that's actually got new people, some really qualified, good engineering and permitting and all sorts of other people that know how to do the job. And, it's the sort of thing that's out there. But you ask questions about it, and nobody knows. Nobody wants to answer questions as to what's going to happen with it. It's in the Senate. It's waiting. But you're not seeing anything that's making it move and making it happen.
Dave, I got one more thing for you. Before the legislators go home, they have their annual confirmation session at which they confirm people who've been nominated from everything to the Board of Hairdressers to the members of the Cabinet. When's that anticipated, and are there any potential surprises out there that we haven't heard about?
It's anticipated it'll be Tuesday morning, about 11 o'clock, something like that. There will be a few appointments that I'm hearing a lot of opposition to. I don't know if any of them has risen to the point of rejecting somebody. The only Cabinet-level person is the Attorney General, and Mike Garrity. He will have some opposition, I do know that. But again, I don't think it's enough to put his confirmation in jeopardy. They've had a bunch of people have resigned and backed off or been taken off the list by the governor.
Because they were going to be controversial?
Mike Eicher that was to be appointed to APOC, and there was some stuff that just came out, was just pulled yesterday from the list. He was
the North Pole dentist who was going to be in the APOC. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Before we're going to wrap up here in a couple minutes, but I want to turn back to Daisha Eaton. Daisha, is there any way to scope out a timeline of how long it would take to resolve the municipal election question? I think that's one of the things that people really want to know. Your smile tells me the answer is it depends.
Difficult question. There is no timeline. I have asked the municipal clerk, Barbara Grinstein, every day whether she knew anything more about when this might be resolved, and she said, we're just taking it day by day. We want to methodically, survey what happened, and we'll take as much time as that takes. And but they seem to be moving through the question ballots pretty quickly. I mean, they got through half of them on Thursday. Friday, they're supposed to get through the other half on Friday. So we could have some answers come next week. We'll see what happens.
Okay, thank you very much. Paul, one of your favorite subjects.
Oh, no.
Texting while driving.
I love it.
It looks like we may actually get a law that deals with that.
Well, we had a law that we thought dealt with that until a Kenai Peninsula judge said no. Law says you can't look at view screens, doesn't say you can't text.
You have words, not a law.
Yeah, exactly. We thought we did, but we don't. And so now we've got in the House, it's moving through finance going to the Rules Committee.
For scheduling on the floor.
That actually says texting. So and get an idea that's what they're talking about. So. Maybe we'll have one, in which case we'll probably save some lives up here in the long run. It's supposed to be texting while driving is your odds of being injured are like two or three times worse than
a
drunk.
Well, and Paul, this is one of our favorite subjects around
and
here.
And a drunk texting, you're a dead man. That's all.
Yeah, well, that they make too many mistakes texting. This would seem that, do we really need a law for this? Because
you wouldn't think so, would you? But there's a lot of us who are just idiots. So yeah, we do.
So my question answered itself.
Pretty much.
Okay. And finally, Representative Wes Keller has a run-in with the Girl Scouts.
And he's going to lose. You can't beat the Girl Scouts. That's all there is to it. He's a dead man. That's all there is.
Senator Betty Davis had a resolution, which
he's concerned.
You've got to remember, it's more or less a commendation. It's not a statement of, it's not a law that can be enforced. It's a statement of sentiment, right?
He's looking for some connection with Planned Parenthood. I think he's maybe barking up the wrong cookie box. I'm not sure.
Okay. Barking up the wrong cookie box is probably the best phrase we're going to get out of this show. I want to thank you very much for joining us on Alaska Edition. And we'll be off next week, but we'll be back in 2 weeks right here once again. Thank you.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskaedition@alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.